that's the real torture of putting the book together. You can fix a poem, you can never fix a manuscript to set right, especially if the poems are intended to go together but don't have any sort of thematic or narrative arc that's intended. The poems in my book are broken into subsections that were intended to sit together in a certain way. So about half of the time that I spent reworking the book was spent mostly reordering the poems, and sending the manuscript off to trusted friends multiple times. And this is years, maybe 3 years of doing this. And it's probably it's the one thing that my editors and my publisher got involved in, was also continuing to reorder it. So I'd given up on really? Doing it by the time that I'd sent it out, and sent it to a press that I trusted what they would do with it. And what they did with it was different than what the direction I was going in, but really they understood what the poems were about and did some things with it I wouldn't have thought to do. So
they kept all the poems that you intended in each subsection in that subsection. So Gorge, those poems are all?
Gorge is the section that got changed the most.
Really?
That was actually a section of shorter poems that all had titles. And that was probably the most radical suggestion my publisher made, was to make it a sequence. And those poems were actually two sequences that I'd just thrown pieces out over the years. And so that was probably the most drastic change, was that Gorge was originally one poem in that section, and we called it that. So, but yeah.
So when you get, I mean, you knew, of course, before the bound book was going to arrive at your door, that the order.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
This wasn't heavy-handed editing. This was a collaborative process between the publisher and the editor and myself.
Angels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Angels are prevalent here.
I guess they're noticeable. People talk about that and more than the baseball now. I think some of the baseball stuff got dropped out. But, yeah, I mean, that particularly in the one sequence, The Talk, which is the oldest piece in the book. I wrote it when I was in graduate school here, or most of it. And that's another piece that was the titles, which all have an angel in the title, were originally the first lines. And this was more of like a long sequence that was actually part of the section that comes before it. I don't know where they come from. I mean, it's poetry, so you can write about what you want. The angels aren't very ethereal.
Right.
they're pretty human. Those are some of the more base poems in the... I mean, I was definitely thinking about... you know, like pubescent emerging sexuality when I was writing the poems, and The Talk is a reference to that. And so I guess one of the reasons why people might be attracted to them in the book is because they represent something that I think all the poems are after, which is a sort of eternity within the physical world that we live in. And a potentiality for all things to be seen as beautiful and divine. And if you call it an angel, it's an angel. So, and also a lot of those poems are based on, I steal lines from some pieces of literature, some famous and some not, and then distort them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Shakespeare line that some people might recognize that's distorted. So they're distorted angels.
Would you like to read
sure.
something?
Okay, I'll read something short that I usually start readings with. I wasn't planning. Okay, this one. This is my Wallace Stevens poem, sort of. No reality but the ruined idea of a God we speak to. Nat caught in the breath of a dismantled catechism, on a cracked pew in a cathedral by the sea. Restore with your nothing wings the way to where I left my shoes. No imagination but in your tiny, ruptured eyes, which may as well see no thing, before a brain which cannot count, behind the inverted cradle of my hands, which in a moment or two will dispatch what I forget.
Do you remember writing that?
I remember when I wrote this batch of poems, and that this one was written in Brooklyn, and this, like a lot of the poems that I ended up gravitating to of my own later on, was a poem that I just had written sort of offhandedly, probably at a coffee shop or a bar somewhere in the neighborhood, and it cast aside as us, nothing to hang on to, just an exercise, but it's stuck around. So
what do you find it? Do you forget about it and then are reminded of it, or?
Well, I can't speak for all poets, but a lot of my poet friends who are getting their first books out or their second books out or whatever, create 4 or 5 manuscripts worth of material for each manuscript. And there's a lot of casting off. I think it happens less as you go on. It's happening less with me. I'm finding less cast-offs, but you don't know what you have, especially you don't know what you have as far as it's going to fit a manuscript until much later. And I know some people who work fast and they put things together intentionally and have this sort of plan for how they're going to write their books, but I don't. A lot of my favorite poets put out a book every 10 years. Mm. So Philip Larkin would be a great example of that. You know, his whole career was 4 books. You have to pay so much attention to the individual poem if you want to make it do certain things, that thinking about a project of 100 pages is so far removed from what you're doing. And I, for one, like to see the larger project emerge out of the smaller poems, especially because the smaller poems deal with the smaller moments. So
I would imagine it'd be intimidating or overwhelming to say, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to come up with a 100-page book of poetry, beginning now.
Well, I think a lot of the poems in here and a lot of the sections in here, that was the intention. Like, oh, I'm going to write, you write one poem and then I'm going to write 80 poems that follow this one in this style. And then maybe you get halfway there and then you end up with 4 or 5 pieces that really work and sit together. And you do something new and you don't think that it fits, but then the next thing puts all 3 of them together in some way. And if you're writing from a center, and my center would have something to do with my own, you know, personal existence, if you're writing from the same place, then you have something that holds it together. And you don't have to know what it is, but definitely that comes to you after the fact.
Do you mind reading Yard Work?
Of course.
I really like that.
This is one of those poems that was part of one of those massive projects that I conceived that eventually ran out of steam. Yard Work. The whisper lasted several hours in the blade chamber, and the bleeding slowed. That Saturday was the longest, and now it's over. When you come back, I'll be behind the barn stacking sticks again, singing, stay, 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 damn bones, bird bones, brain-boned mocking song leaking light along a sheaf of lawn, razor-clipped answer to a nonce prayer.
I love that last line.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love the word nonce.
Yeah, I do too.
And I had never thought of it in the context with prayer. This is definitely one of the poems in the book that was written in a fury, and I was trying to let language sort of rise subconsciously or whatever that might mean, and not so much questioning what I was doing. Of course, this poem's heavily revised. It was completely different when I wrote it, but I got these lines out of it that are like the other lines in that section. I went to a parochial. I went to a Lutheran school when I was in elementary school, and so the prayer and things like that always kind of just rise to the surface. And nonce, of course, meaning, you know, we use it to refer to, say, a poetic prosodic form that hasn't been used before. So it's only been used once. So an invented form. At one point, a sonnet was a nonce form. Hmm. And then it wasn't when someone else did it again.